Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I am your host, Mona Shake, you guys. What's happening? James is here. Good afternoon, everyone. Hello, James. Tim is here. Hi, James. James and Tim are exchanging hellos while I am also saying hello. You guys, I'm very excited by my guest today because she's a returning guest, and the last time she came, we had such a great conversation. She has an incredible show you guys should all check out. It's on Showtime, and I really hope I'm not butchering up this name. It's called Funny Women of a Certain Age. It's a fucking fantastic show. I've watched it. I loved it. Here's my very talented friend, Carol McCumbery. How are you?
Good. How are you? You're very perky. You're like, wow. I'm just barely, barely alive at this point. I'm like, oh my goodness, she's awake. Okay.
I have about, I drank this much coffee. Do you do this, Carol, when you have, like, I have a packed day today. Like, I just had a 11 a.m. therapy session. I had a 10 a.m. call. I had to do errands before that. When I'm, like, packed schedule back to back, my brain just goes, we are on. Like, I'm just, like, wired. Do you get like that?
I used to. I don't do as much coffee anymore, but what you're describing is what I used to do all the time. I mean, I used to just get up, drink coffee, and just constantly do that because, you know, you do your daytime and then at nighttime.
That's
I nap a lot more now. That's me.
Good for you. How do you nap, Carol? Can you teach me that? I don't know how to nap. I
really
nap.
Well, I'm up.
That's it.
Really? Napping is my, I'm actually doing a show this Sunday. It's a matinee show. And the reason I took the show is because I'll be home by 5 so I can have my nap.
Okay. How long do you nap? 30 minutes, 2 hours? What are we looking at?
It depends. There's a thing that I call it the military nap. And it's basically 20 minutes because when I was on the road, when I used to tour with the troops and we literally, you talk about going all day. Like we would be up at like 5 in the morning and we would have to fly to whatever base we were going to. And I mean, literally, even though we were based at one place, they would say, you know, bring a backpack with your clothes just in case you want to change. And we would get back sometimes at 2 in the morning. So what I would do is I learned this from the soldiers. I learned, like, I would watch them. I'm like, and they'd lay back and they'd close their eyes for literally 20 minutes and they'd wake up and they were fine. And you know what? That's like the greatest thing in the world. So I do those most of the day. I'm napping right now.
With your eyes open.
With my eyes open. Yeah. So it's been, and then there were days where it's just constant. And then when I do finally nap, I shouldn't have napped because I'm so tired when I wake up.
Right. One of those things. Sometimes when you nap, you wake up and you're like, oh my God, I just need to go to sleep. I'm so exhausted.
Yeah.
I heard somewhere that the nap time, which a lot of people think is like 30 minutes, an hour, the accurate nap time that scientists consider is 2 hours. That's a nap.
Really?
Yeah, 2 hours is the nap. Good luck to me. No, good luck. It will take me 2 hours just to shut my eyes and shut my brain off. Two hours.
Well, but I've also, one of the great things about the pandemic is because we had nothing to do. And you're a type A like I am. Yeah. To me, the pandemic was actually a good thing because it was the universe going, slow the fuck down, Carol. Slow down. So I learned to just go, all right, well, there's nothing to do. So learn how to take it down. So you have to really want to do that. Like now that we're back in, the world is coming back, my day just, I get up and it's like as if the pandemic never happened. It's just constant.
Right.
So
how was the comedy scene? I mean, is it pretty much back to normal in New York? How is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's pretty much back to normal. I mean, the clubs opened up April 2nd to, I think it was, I want to say 33% capacity. And so I was at Stand Up New York the first night that they reopened. I was doing shows there. And yeah, I mean, like, you know, the New York scene, I don't know if it's like this in L.A., but there's a lot of bar shows. Are there a lot of bar shows in L.A.?
We have a lot of – see, L.A. is so massive.
Yeah.
Like, you can go to the Valley and there's a whole comedy scene. You can go to Orange County and they have their own comedy scene. L.A. proper has its own. So there have been a lot of outdoor shows, like a lot. There is a brand new comedy club that opened up here, literally across from another comedy club. So there
is that
like,
the one. Is that the one in North Hollywood?
That's the one in North Hollywood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I did their outdoor show, which was a lot of fun.
Right.
But then they were getting complaints from the neighborhood about the noise, so they had to do all the shows indoors. So and indoor was 100% capacity. 100%.
Wow. Wow.
Which I was like, oh wow, you guys have 100% capacity inside right now? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we do a residency for the women of a certain age and at the Crane here in New York City on the Lower East Side, and they were the only they're so good. They, like, all the theaters should take the precautions this theater does, and they were like, we're only going to do a couple of seats. We're going to, you know, it was a 99 black box, so I think the most we could get in there was like 20, and they were really, really, you know, like, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. And now we started to reopen, and they took the longest because they didn't, first of all, New York City, Mayor de Blasio is terrible. He's a horrible mayor. I mean, I would run for mayor, and my slogan would literally be, I'm not Bill de Blasio. Vote for me. So nobody.
Well, why? He's that bad, huh?
Yeah, he's horrible. And he's a Democrat, and I voted for him. But he, there's no guidelines. Like, none of the small theaters, like Broadway's coming back in September at full capacity. But for the small little funky little black boxes and these tiny, the comedy clubs, the music venues, nobody knew what was going on. Can we have a full audience? Do we have social distance? Nothing. So, I mean, and that falls on him. That absolutely, was doing an advertisement. He's such a, can't stand it, but he, one day he's doing news conference. Nobody's doing news conferences. Even the fucking governor is no longer doing a conference. Every day he goes and one day he shows up, he's literally has Shake Shack next to him and he's eating Shake Shack. He goes, you know, if you get vaccinated, you can have Shake Shack. I'm like, get off of my fucking TV. I mean, he's such an idiot. But literally we have had nothing. Nobody knows anything. So like the Crane, we're going to,
I mean, you guys are not following CDC guidelines. I don't understand.
No. But the city has to give you guidelines too.
Ooh, right.
But nobody's given us anything. So I think we're going to 50% capacity for the theater. It's terrible. So you know, but I've been vaccinated. I am assuming you have been vaccinated. I mean, we're going. My son and my husband are going to a Mets game on Saturday, and we're gonna sit in the vaccinated section, and so I mean, it's getting back to normal. I mean, you know, I mean, New York City, when they first announced you didn't have to wear a mask, everyone was still wearing the mask outside. But now, even my husband and I, and my son, who is like a germaphobe, he's like, the CDC says we don't have to wear masks outside, so we're not wearing masks outside. It's weird. It's very weird.
I mean, we're not wearing masks outside either. I don't know about you guys, but we are, our stadiums here, like, you know, like, LA, like the Staples Center downtown.
Right.
You show up, you cannot eat inside at your seat. You cannot eat or drink. You have to have your mask. You
really?
Want to eat or drink? Yes. You buy your eat food. You sit, stand outside, socially distant, eat and drink your food. Then you sit inside and put your mask on.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I wonder what the baseball game is like there, because we're supposed to come out to see a Dodger game with friends, and I'm wondering whether or not I'm assuming, because the Staples Center's indoors though, isn't it?
Staples Center's indoors. Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
The mask stuff. But yeah, you guys, the Mets Stadium is outdoors, right?
Right. But like, I know that. The Strokes are doing the show here in New York City in a small venue and it's fully vaccinated, no masks, and it's indoors. So, you know,
are they checking you for your vaccination card? Like, they're like, hey, I'm vaccinated.
I haven't got my son. My son went to a couple of ball games already, and he said, you just bring your card, and then they let you, they let you in. If you don't have your card, you don't get in, you know. So
it's so crazy, Carol. I feel like New Yorkers are probably a lot more inclined to be like, let's get vaccinated, let's be socially distant, let's wear the freaking mask, like, you know, let's continue. In LA, it's strange. Like Orange County, in the heart of the pandemic, no social distancing, 100% capacity in restaurants, no masks. Oh, it doesn't pertain to us. Oh, it doesn't affect us. I went to Huntington Beach. I was like, am I in fucking Afghanistan? What the fuck is happening here? Nobody's following the goddamn guidelines. We're in the middle of a fucking pandemic here, people.
But
it's very different. It's so strange here. When you go to different pockets, people behave very differently, very entitled.
Oh, yeah, but like on Long Island and Staten Island, which is they're a predominantly red areas, you know, that's their company line. The party line is that this, even though their leader got vaccinated in private,
right before he left the White House. Yes.
Right. So the vaccines do work. I do think that probably I wouldn't be surprised that in the fall, we have to get booster shots, but you get a flu shot every year. So I have no problem doing any of it. You know, that's the one good thing that the state did. Like we went and had ours. Ours was, we got our shots at a state run, facility, and it was run and the military was there and they don't take any shit. Like, you know, we were in and we were out within an hour. It was amazing.
I was talking to a girlfriend of mine. She's also a fellow New Yorker, so she's a writer. She's out here for a gig. And we were talking, and she was like, yeah, I was talking to this guy. She's single. She was talking to this guy on a dating app, and he goes to her, are you vaccinated? She goes, yeah, I'm vaccinated. She goes to the guy, are you vaccinated? He goes, no. He goes, but if we exchange our body fluids, you know, you can give your vaccination to me, so then I'll be safe too. Yeah, people actually believe that. Like, that's how demented – I mean, I honestly feel like the pandemic has really exposed this level of ignorance and this lack of education in America, which you never thought as, you know, that really existed on that deep level where you're like, this is America? Like, what? Like, you're going to exchange fluids and going to get vaccination? What the fuck are you talking about? Like, what level of fucking ignorance is this?
Yeah, well, there was that story, what was it, a couple of days ago? Where the woman was discussing that if you took the vaccine, it would magnetize you. And that forks.
That's right. That's a new thing.
Forks would stick to your head. And I was like, oh my God, so many missed opportunities if I was magnetized. You know, but people, you know, really believe that. So you just have to be like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And you're like, this is why the pandemic is here. It's to, like, right.
But it's not just. But you know, I mean, that it's not just here. That's around the world.
For sure, right?
Because there were people probably when it first started in China that went, oh no, this is nothing. It's just a flu.
Right.
And what happens is when you're dealing with hundreds of millions of people, the reason why it took off here, okay, because we knew about it. I want to say we knew about it in December or January, but New York City, for example, because we were the epicenter for so long, mm-hmm. when people fly here from all over the world. Yeah. So what happened is whomever transmitted it to Europe, it started to go like crazy in Europe. And then the people who were traveling from Europe came to America, and that's where it came from.
I
remember when they finally... Because my girlfriend was touring. She's a comedian, a great young comic named Liz Mealy, and she always tours in Europe.
Yeah.
And I saw that she said her all of her shows got canceled. She had to fly back. Like it was one of those things where, like, they on Monday they said, all right, we're doing a band, and everyone had to be back home by Wednesday. And there was a video of, I think it was a stopover in Dallas, and people, there were thousands of people Like in the you've gone and come back and done customs. Yeah. You know how crazy it is.
Yes.
So there were all these people coming back from Europe in one area. And gee, you want, and from Dallas, which is also a huge hub, they go off to something. People don't realize it. It's like that old shampoo commercial. You tell two people, and then you tell two people, and then you tell two people, and they just. You're a baby. You wouldn't remember that commercial, but it was for I think it was for Herbal Essence. But it was like if you tell two people, and then they put two people up, and then you and then you saw it, and that's how this happened. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I've said this before because, you know, people are pigs. Okay. Before when I was flying, I used to wipe shit down.
Yeah.
I was that type of person because I would look over and there'd be somebody with their fucking feet on the dinner tray. So why is anybody surprised at this spread?
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, how many people go to the bathroom?
People are gross.
And how many people go to the bathroom and don't wipe their hands?
Well, don't wipe their hands? Or go to the bathroom in their socks? Your socks? Oh, my God. Somebody peed all over the ground, and now it's in your socks, and it's soaked up?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not surprised, but that's a human thing. That's a human – that's not just an American thing. That's a human thing. Humans are just – you know, and they also – and a lot of people just think, it won't happen to me.
Right.
And at the beginning of the pandemic, it was only mostly affecting people of color.
Yeah.
As soon as it started to affect other people, that's when everyone went, oh, shit, this might be something bad.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of reasons for it. But, like, I don't agree with people that say that this was a hoax and all that stuff. But I do get it because you know, if it's not affecting you, nobody cares.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like, I knew people.
Which is pretty much the Republican slogan, right? If it doesn't affect us, then it doesn't matter, right?
Right,
until it comes to affects us, and then we're like, oh, all hell is fucking breaking loose.
Right, right. But it's definitely the way they think, but it is really just a human reaction to it. I was very lucky.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I knew people who had it, but they had it early on, and they were younger. Like, I didn't lose anybody. But I know one of my friends lost, like, 10 people. He knew 10 people that you know, like, we had the exterminator here last night because we had mice in the apartment. And he said his son and his wife had gotten it. Wow. And you know what I mean? Like, so, I mean, I absolutely, but I didn't know anybody that died from it, you know, and so, you know, the humans are generally like, this is my bubble, this is my life,
yes.
And it doesn't affect me, so I don't care. And that's people, period.
That's correct. Yeah. By the way, loving your cap, that whole Baby Yoda action is fantastic. Yes.
Grogu.
And Grogu is glowing. It's so cute. It's so cute.
My son bought me this for Christmas.
I figured as much. It's very cute.
Well, I needed him today because it was just one of these, you know, yesterday, literally. So I'm also working on I develop and direct solo shows, which is the way you and I had first met.
Yeah.
So I'm working on this solo show.
Carol, I completely forgot about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm working on this solo show and yesterday we had to do notes because we did the first stage reading and so we didn't have time. So I was at her place at 10. At 11:30, I had to leave and rush back to the apartment because the exterminator was coming because we had mice. So that was a whole big thing. And literally while he's here, he's putting traps out and killing them. I mean, it was the exterminator said, he goes, I've never killed this many mice while I was at a place. I was like, okay. So that was going on. And then I had... It was literally one of those days where it was just, so I said today, okay, Grogu, you just got to give me some like Yoda love so I can just chill the fuck out. And he actually has helped.
That's awesome. That's wonderful.
Yeah, helped.
I have some things like that where I put them on and then I'm like, I feel at peace. I feel calm. You were talking about your the one woman shows and, you know, the individual shows that you help out, but funny women of a certain age, it's on Showtime.
Yes.
Everybody go and watch it on Showtime. It's a fantastic show. I've watched it and I loved it. Do you guys have more seasons or more episodes you guys are going to be shooting? Or
we're waiting to hear. You know, like it's basically a show by show episode. So we did the first one, and that was the highest rated Showtime's high rated special of 2019. We did a second one that premiered the Saturday before we went into lockdown. So you know, had we not had the pandemic, we'd probably be on the fourth or fifth show by now. So, you know, but you know, I created the show. I wanted to give women over 50 a chance to be seen because, and as you know, being, and you live in Los Angeles, so you know this, you know, we are not considered, you know, we are not considered anything.
Yeah.
You know,
Carol, 50s. Carol, I got a role to audition for, and I'm reading through the character description and says, this character is in their 60s. I emailed my agent. I'm like, this fucking role is in its 60s. Do I look 60 to you? Am I LA 60? What the fuck am I? Like, what? Right. If I don't look like an infant, then I'm like LA 60? And she's like, no. They wrote 60s, but they're open to all ages, which is why, you know, they think you'll be right for the part, which is why they want you to read it. So, you know, so that kind of mind fuck. So I totally get it. I totally get the 50 plus. Carol, I feel like LA is very, very ageist like that, right? Hollywood can be very, there's a lot of ageism. There's definitely a lot of sexism. But I feel like in New York, it's a lot more embracing. Is it different for you? Or do you feel like, is it different for female comics above the age of 50 in New York versus in Los Angeles?
Well, you know, the few times I've done shows out there with funny women of a certain age, I always go on stage and say, you know, because I'm 63 now, and I'm always like, well, you know, I'm in my 60s, so basically I'm dead. But, you know, what I do like about what's happening right now is yes, you know, and I talk about ageism a lot in my new set that I'm working on. But obviously ratings matter because, you know, though Hacks is a brilliant show, the show with Jean Smart, that I don't think that would have aired if Showtime hadn't aired our specials, because Showtime showed the world that women over a certain age are still funny. So the whole idea of this woman being a woman of a certain age, and then of course there's Schitt's Creek. There's another great character. I mean, you know, like I feel kind of proud that it's like, hey, you know, maybe we had something to do with that all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, that's right. Women don't, you know, they don't have to be a size 2, and they don't have to be, like I say on stage now, I said, you know, sex, ageism runs, you know, through all genders. I said, the only difference is that when men hit, you know, get into, you know, when they get started treated, hit with ageism, they're in their 60s. And when women get hit with ageism, they're 15.
Yeah. That is very accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, Carol, ever since I was in my 20s, even in my early 20s, I was going out to audition for roles in 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how I was being looked at. I was like, I'm only 22 or I'm only 23. And you think I'm 32 or 35 or 40.
Right.
And I was a fucking size 2, 120 pounds, like workout, like a fucking maniac person. And this is how you see me. So I think I should have started auditioning when I was in my mother's womb. But I don't think my mom would have signed me up for acting class. You know, it's freaking ridiculous. Carol, do you, I mean, first of all, kudos to you guys for setting that amazing precedence at Showtime to be like, yeah, let's give Hacks an opportunity and let's give all these incredible, amazing women these opportunities. Because look, we're all going to get there sooner or later. If you could be a fucking hot young thing today, you're going to age. Okay. That's just right. If you are, I feel like aging is a privilege, right?
Right. There are
absolutely. Many people I know who die. Two of my girlfriends died last year. One at 43, one at 48, right?
Wow, thank
you. Never had the privilege of aging, right? Never got the privilege of aging.
Right.
My aunt died at 42. Never had the privilege of aging. My father died at 56. Never had the privilege of aging. So I think aging is a privilege.
No.
know, for a lot of people, that's not really granted to everyone. And the fact that how women are dismissed because, you know, first we're constantly based, look, you know, judged on our looks when we're young. Mm-hmm. Then we get older and it's like, now you're old. It's like, well, motherfucker, everybody gets old. Like, what the fuck are you coming at me for? You know?
Right.
When Jack Nicholson is in his 60s, he's an eligible bachelor, right?
Right.
Well, right. For some reason, in her 60s, well, I don't know. We were looking for someone younger. Well, fuck you.
Right. No. That's the reason why I came up with the show is that I, two reasons, because I wanted to work with my friends and I wanted to give women that were overlooked a chance to be seen. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, the difference, I was going to say, there is really no difference in between LA and New York as far as the scene, because they still worship the younger comics too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, and that's fine. I mean, you know, I mean, I did a show a couple of weeks ago. It was raining. It was outside. Yeah. There was a metal roof on the top. And I'm like, I'm going to just get hit by lightning. This is how it's going to end. I'm going to be. But it was all young comics and, you know, young, some new, some old. You know, and I just, you know, I don't pull rank. I go in because I need to work on my new material, and I just sit there and I wait for them to bring me on. And, you know, some of them judge me and some of them don't, you know, like they, you know, when I play, one of the things about the rooms here in New York is that a lot of them are now like these little hipster bars and all that stuff. So the first thing I say, just so when I walk out, because there's nobody even in their 30s I look at them and I go, I know, why is there a Karen on stage? And then once I get them to, oh, okay. And then I go, you know, and then I say something else, but I do acknowledge that they're looking at me like, or, you know, you could be my grandmother. I mean, that's how they look at me. So I will get them or I won't get them, but you know, they're not the only crowd. So, but if I, you know, like I said, I'm working on this new 10. So it's very important for me to be able to get the words out. I'm not a musical comic when it comes to, I don't sing a song or anything, but musicality is very important. It's very important the way I deliver, the way I perform. So for me, when I write material, I have to go out. It's different with Zoom, because when you're doing Zoom, and we've all done the Zoom shows, you can't really, you're just looking at the camera and you're doing your jokes. But I'm a physical comic where I move and I walk and I go over to the audience and I'm talking. So for me to have to be out there in a room full of millennials, I don't care if they're not laughing. I'm listening to hear whether or not I'm getting the right beats on the joke.
Mm. Do you feel sometimes like, I'm at a hipster bar, so I have to like curtail my material, or I wanted to work on this, but I'm not because I don't think this crowd's going to get it or whatever?
No, so my process, people who know me, my close friends, my comics, we always joke about me that, because I'm one of the laziest people in the world. I really am when it comes to comedy. I know everyone thinks, oh my God, how could you be lazy? You created a show that's, you know, touring all over the place. But what I mean by that is unless I have to actually work on a piece, I don't go out. One of the only good things for me about Zoom was that I literally could be doing the show in my pajamas. Do you know what I mean? For example, years ago, I was asked to do the Funniest Mom in America show, which like the second or third show, and it was a clean, you know, you have to be clean, and I'm not a clean comic. So I had my cutesy little mommy 8-minute set, and I went around the city and I said, may I go on? And you know, so I go to Dangerfields, and who did I follow? Oh, what the fuck is this? Oh, yes. Okay. So, I said to them, you know, because I was a regular at the club. I said, can I go up and do my time? He goes, okay, you can go out. You can go on after Jim Norton. So, Jim is great. And listen, any other time, you know, I can follow him without him blinking because I'm a blue comic. But I'm like, oh fuck, you know,
because I'm doing a clean set.
And he didn't know that I was doing. He knows me. He didn't know I was doing a clean set, so he does his set.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I went on and I just did my little, hey, I'm a mom, and hey, aren't kids funny? And it wasn't a matter, it's never a matter of the audience laughing when you're working on material. That's my view.
Yeah.
It's a matter of getting the words out and remembering it. So to me, to go to an audience and look at an audience and go, oh, they're young, I should change my material when I need to work on this 10 minutes, fuck it. No, I'm not changing it. You know, I mean, and I don't care if they hate me. I have to work on this material. Like, I have literally, in the last few weeks, because I'm working on this new 10, reached out to everybody. So literally every night I'm going to these, like, for me to go to fucking Brooklyn. I mean, I'm from Brooklyn, but for me to schlep to fucking Brooklyn to do a show.
Williamsburg, where are you going, Carol?
Where am I going in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
A friend of mine is doing a show tomorrow night at the Brooklyn Museum. It's an outdoor show. I'll be, you know, but, you know.
I used to live around the corner from the Brooklyn Museum.
Okay. Yeah. And my son lives 15 minutes away, so he's probably going to bike over and see the show. But I don't do that type of stuff. You know what I mean? So I never worry that the audience is going to, I know this is for a comedian to say this is so bad, but I never worry if the audience is going to laugh. I know the joke is good. I just have to figure out how the joke is good. And that's why you need an audience. In the same vein, so the solo show that I'm working on with this young lady named Caitlin Bailey, it's a show called Whore's Eye View, and it's 10,000 years of history of sex workers in the history of America, in the world. And it's, you know, and I always fuck up that thing. But that's one of the things I said to her, too, because it's part history, it's part stand-up, it's part solo show. So the reason we're doing the stage reading is so she can hear where the laughs are. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's very hard when you're doing Zoom.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's right.
Nothing beats that in-person experience. Like, nothing. I mean, I went and did shows, and it, you know, you've been doing comedy way longer than I have, so I can't even compare. But for me, it's like when I stepped up on stage at the Comedy Chateau when I was doing the outdoor show, it was like, I was like wobbly. I felt like a cat that was given birth, and I'm just like, you know? Like, trying to, like, get, and I'm just like, fuck, I've been doing this for fucking 10, 11 years. Like, why am I acting like I'm doing this for the first time? But you lose your bearings a little bit. You have to kind of get back into the rhythm. I was like, okay, that's what works.
Right.
And then I had two hecklers on top, right? One drunk lady in the back and one drunk dude in the front looking like fucking Vanilla Ice. Like, I was like, ridiculous, right? So I was like, all right, this is a really fucking good start. I mean, it was a great show. I had a great time and it was awesome. But I felt a little wobbly. Did you feel a little wobbly when you did the stand? Did you say the stand comedy club the first time?
Stand Up New York is when I did the first time I was back in a comedy club indoors. Yeah, I mean, I think it doesn't matter. I mean, I've been doing stand up for over 40 years, so it does. I don't think it matters how long you've been doing it. I would assume that someone like Seinfeld would get on stage after not being on stage for a year and go, okay, what do we do? You know what I mean? Like, because none of us knew what to do. You get so used to performing and then all of a sudden it gets taken away from you. And like I said, even though the Zoom shows are good, like there are certain great Zoom shows that are fabulous. You know what I mean? They are absolutely fabulous. And they run well and you can see the audience. But then there's the ones where there's six people and you don't see them. So you're like, why am I doing? And why are you even watching the show if you're not there to laugh? You know, but everybody, there's not one comic that I've spoken to that wasn't feeling like, what am I doing? Like, do I even know how to do this anymore? But then it comes back. It's like riding a bike. I mean, you know, I'm very comfortable again.
Or like getting laid. You're like, oh, that's how that was done. That's where that goes.
I remember that.
5 years. All right. That's how that works. You're just like, Carol, what I love is that, I mean, fuck, you've been doing comedy for 40 years. You're like, I'm a blue comic, right?
Right.
It's funny for me, it's like, I do blue material, but then I also do clean material. So I can go from G-rated to R-rated, right? So I have, like, this range of sets that I've built, you know. I'll get invited to come in you know, MC like a 2,000 people event, and yeah, I have to be super clean about it, right?
Right, right,
or,
right.
Or you know, I'll go do a room of 50 or 20 or whatever, right? Does it, in the beginning, or even, you know, did you go through a phase where you were like, fuck, I don't want to be labeled as a blue comic. Like, I want to be labeled as a certain kind of a comic.
No, never. I mean, I've been dirty from day one. From day one. You know what I mean? I mean, I it's like I've said this before. I am from Brooklyn, so fuck is an adjective.
That is correct. That is
so,
correct.
So I've always been this person who spoke my mind and cursed. I mean, it had nothing to do with, like, I don't say fuck just to say it. That's how I talk. So, one of the things I do now, because I've been doing it for so long, is that I know I can do clean if I have to. I don't want to. If I get hired, like if I do a corporate thing and they say, listen, we prefer, then fine. You're hiring me to do that. I have 40 years experience. Okay, I won't curse for you. But like my favorite story about cursing and blue material. So when I was working in Vegas, I was in two different burlesque shows. One was Crazy Girls and one was Midnight Fantasy. So in Crazy Girls, the producer loved that I was dirty. He you know, because it was a burlesque show. It was a topless dance show. So he let me be as dirty as I wanted. I mean, dirty, really dirty, you know. So, you know, Red Fox is like, Carol, you need to fucking calm down. And but then I did as an experiment, and purely because I like to do that. I like to experiment with, you know, whatever area I'm in. I decided I wasn't going to curse. Still did.
Be dirty, but not curse.
But not curse. And okay. Okay, so I, you know, like I said, this was for the second show.
Yeah.
You know, and they loved it. They were very happy. We had some incidents. I was let go because the hotel was taken over by a bigger corporation. They wanted to try to save money. Then they asked me to come back because they made a mistake. So when they asked me to come back, I went, all right, I'm going to try something. So I did the exact same act, but I threw in the F word. Okay. And the first time I did it, the next day I got a call from the hotel. You have never been that dirty. How could you be? And I said fuck like three times. So you know, it's all bullshit. It's all the way they perceive you. So right. So yeah. So I always tell comics, when you are performing, be who you are. What's interesting, I have noticed. Because I've been working with a lot of young comics, you know, in these shows and everything, nobody curses, which I think is like so funny. Nobody curses. They just don't curse. Not that they don't curse because they're clean. They just don't curse. And I come from New York where, what the fuck are you looking at? You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
So
it's the first thing in the morning.
Right. Yeah. I look at my husband like, what the fuck are you looking at? I mean, you know, so that's how we start. So it's fascinating to me. Maybe it's because a lot of these young comics are not from New York. I'm not really sure. You know?
So. Yeah. 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 That they don't wanna whatever their thing is. Carol, have you thought about funny women touring around the world? Is that a thing? Maybe going to Europe and other places?
Actually we're in the midst of casting the tour. For 2022. I mean, I say casting, you know, we're figuring out dates. We had a full tour ready to go, then the pandemic hit. So we're looking to tour mostly the United States. I think eventually, I mean, my dream is to have a residency in Vegas and different touring companies.
Where would you like a residency? Which one of the
hotels?
Yeah. Which hotel?
Well, I would probably say the Venetian. That was my favorite hotel when I lived there. I think a beautiful hotel.
I was just there for my birthday week in Vegas at the Venetian. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful hotel.
I must confess, Carol, very interesting group of people coming through now with the stimulus checks and the unemployment money.
Really?
I was in a non-smoking area where I was staying. I check in, beautiful suite. Massive, beautiful suite I got for my birthday.
Right.
The weekend. Motherfucker smoking blunt next door. doing
wow.
shots. There must have been at least 8 to 10 people in the one room.
Wow.
So they'll be like, oh, we only, you know, we only have 2 people that they'll check in and then bring up 6 people. And then people are just sleeping on the floor, sleeping wow. wherever. Yeah.
Did you complain to anybody?
I did. I called them up and I was like, I'm not staying in this room. You got to okay. give me a room in a completely different tower. I'm not fucking right. staying here. So as I'm leaving, I think the lady next door kind of figured out that I was the one, you know, was just like, dude, why the fuck are you smoking a blunt? Like, this is a non-smoking area. Why don't you right. go check yourself in a smoking area? That's not a problem.
Right.
I go to the next tower, check in there. Motherfucker doing shots next door. Shots, 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 shots. Loud, loud. Screaming, cursing in the hall. I'm like, do y'all know where you're at? Like, do y'all know? Like, you know, there's a certain way to behave. Like, well, I go to the swimming pool, people laughing, screaming, not a care in the world that somebody else is relaxing. So it was very interesting. I honestly was really turned off by the Venetian.
Well, you know, once again, to play devil's advocate, and listen, I would have been the same way. I would have, you know, been screaming at it. But that's because the reason is because we've been locked up for a year. That doesn't make it right. But that's why. That's absolutely why these people. Yeah. Nobody. I mean, I see it. I see it in. Like I went down. Where was I? I was in the village. Was I in the village? I don't remember. Oh yeah, yeah. When I mean, even in the rain, people are just going out and drinking and screaming because we were all locked up. Everyone's like, man! I was like, nobody knows how to fucking act anymore.
Yeah, nobody. I think Vegas is really the place. I was talking to a girlfriend of mine. I was like, bring your bathing suit. She's like, I don't have the self-esteem to wear a bathing suit. I'm like, Vegas is the one place where you don't need to have self-esteem. People go there just to be like the shittiest version of themselves.
Right. People I would know.
Forget. It's like they forget how to behave. It's they forget how to act.
Well, and also Vegas has always been that. Vegas has always been, you know, don't ask, don't tell, you know, and so people get. Yeah, I mean, I was there for so long, so I'm sure that there were people in the audiences that were, you know, crazy. But, you know, I mean, I remember I look back at Vegas fondly because, you know, my son grew up there. You know, he was there from when he was 4 to 14. And, you know, I always do this in my, you know, my family and my career are separate things. I talk about my family and my act, but I don't. You know, they don't mix as far as, you know, so when I was in Vegas, I literally would leave to go to work at 7, get out of the cul-de-sac, drive the car to the club, to the hotel, do my show, come back. And then my daytime was consisted of living my life with my son. It's like a lot of people, you know, especially in New York, you come back after living in Vegas, they're like, oh, whoa, what was it like living in Vegas? Were you gambling all the time? I was like, yes, my son learned to, my son learned math from a crap stealer. And, you know, like they don't, did you live in the hotel? I actually did live in a hotel for 2 months until we bought something. But there, you know, when you live there, as opposed to what you did, because you went to visit, you're never in the hotel. You're never, I mean, especially.
That's what I was going to buy a place in Vegas right before the pandemic hit. So Did you live in Henderson or where did you live? Summerlin?
I actually lived right in Las Vegas. I lived by Flamingo and Decatur.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so right by the Rio and the Gold Coast, and right there. And because I've always been this way. Especially when I'm working, like I wanted to be able. I literally, like I said, I got out. I could leave my house at 7:15 and still get to the hotel by half hour, because it took 15 minutes. You know, you just went over DI and I was at the Riviera. But when you're going to visit Vegas, Vegas is not fun if you're just there to be. Yeah. That's not fun.
I mean, I had a pretty, I dropped a lot of cash on my birthday this year, like stupid amounts where I think I was really doing what other people have been doing, was just like, celebrating, having a good time or whatever. Carol, what do you got? You got do you have shows pretty much lined up for the entire week? And where can people go and watch you if they're in New York? Or are you even doing Zoom shows now?
No. I'm the next for virtual will be. I'm looking at my little calendar thing here. My next virtual show is July 25th with the Nowhere Comedy Club because we did such a great job. They do a great job.
Oh, Nowhere Comedy Club is the shit. They're I did their show. I mean, I had a great time.
Yeah. So that's January 25th.
Ben Gleeb. Did Ben Gleeb book you?
I don't remember. You're asking the wrong person. I don't remember. Are you kidding me? I just get an email. I go, okay. But for the people who are listening, we're doing a show in Westport, Connecticut on June 21st, a funny women's show. We have the residency at the Crane on the Lower East Side the last Wednesday of every month. We're doing Stand Up New York on July 8th. We have another show in Connecticut on the 7th. We have another show in Sellersville, Pennsylvania. If you go to Funny Women of a Certain Age, you'll see all of the dates. And that's really, I mean, like I'm doing a show in Poughkeepsie at the end of July. And it's funny, it's a Carol Montgomery show. And it's like, I forget, oh, right, I could do Carol Montgomery shows. But do you know what I mean? I forget because I'm always booking funny women. Always. So it's like, oh, right, I can do a Carol Montgomery show. So that'll be nice for me because I'm just going to go there. I think it's a Holiday Inn. You know, it's all about the hotel. Yeah. I can be naked. Nobody bothers me. It's a good thing.
Can't really do that at home. Okay.
No, because I live with my mother-in-law, so it gets kind of scary.
Oh, that's
kind of
creepy.
Yeah.
It's a little creepy. That's
exactly.
Yeah, I had this friend that I'm going to put it in air quotes. She used to do this thing, which I later discovered that she had the hots for me, which I didn't know. She was married, but every time I would go to visit her, she would open the door naked. She would be stark naked opening the door. And I was like, hey, could you like put something on? Because you're my friend and I don't want to see you stark naked. And she was like, no, I just feel so free and so open. And I'm like, well, I don't feel so free and so open. So put some shit on. Like, it's fucking creepy and weird. Even women can be creepy too. That's creepy. Yes.
It is creepy. That's very weird.
That's very fucking weird. Speaking of Liz Mealy, by the way, earlier, not that Liz Mealy's a creepy girl, but speaking of Liz Mealy earlier, I had her on and we had a great conversation. So
yeah, she's great. She's like one of my comedy kids.
Yeah,
I've known Liz for a lot. Her and Gina Brion, they're my comedy babies. When I moved back here, 2006. So we've been back 15 years. So when I met them, they were just young comics trying to make it. And now both of them are so successful and they're hard workers. And that's an important distinction because there's some new younger comics that I'm friends with. And it's the same thing. Yeah. In this business, you have to work hard.
Yes.
I'm tired of hearing people go, oh, it's so hard. And I'm going to do. It's like, you know what? You're not hard. This whole business is hard work. There's not a moment when you are comfortable ever.
That's correct.
Even when you, like a good friend of mine, Thea Vidal, she had her own series years ago. And everyone was like, she has a series. Oh my God, her life is so wonderful. Well, everyone forgets that the name of the show was Thea. So everything falls on her back.
Right.
If the show does well, accolades for Thea, but literally they would, I think they aired the show on Thursday. So Fridays, I think, was when we'd get the ratings back. You know, we'd hear about the ratings. And if she went below top 10, you got shit for it. So people always forget that people are always like, oh, I want to be famous. I said, you know, when you get to a certain level, you have to stay at that fucking
level.
That's
correct. You have to deliver. I mean, look, this might be a strange example, but a lot of people talk a lot of shit about Jennifer Lopez. Now, J-Lo may not be the best singer to someone or best actress, but God damn it, you got to give it to the girl, man. She's been pulling it through for decades. She's been in the fucking zone, like coming every time. And even though she gets knocked down, then she gets up and reinvents herself and 50-year-old with a rocking body. like fucking pole dancing and, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. So I have a lot of respect where, you know, people, for people like yourself, like day in and day out, you guys, you've been doing this for 4 decades and still going strong and still hustling. What I have a lot of respect for Carol, I think that's what's very humbling about comedy is that you could be Carolyn McCumbry, you could be Bill Burr, Jerry Seinfeld. Once you're done putting your material out there, you got to go back all the way to the scratch, right? You got to go back, and you're starting from scratch as if you're just working out new jokes and you're gonna bomb, and that's just the way it is.
Right, right. But that's what that comedy is, the great equalizer.
Yes.
Because there's a great scene. Jerry Seinfeld did a documentary called Comedian.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
I saw it. When did it come out?
My son was not even a teenager.
It came out
a
long time ago. Right? Yeah.
But we went to see. I took him with me, and one of the reasons I love, it's a little bit different. You know, like he's like, I'm working on a new hour. Yeah, and you're in a private jet, so shut the fuck up. But you know what I mean? Like you know, when you're working on a material, like I'm going to be doing an outdoor show tomorrow. So it's like, it's a little bit different because the creature comforts you have. But one of the things I loved is he was doing the material at Governor's in Long Island. And his opening act was a kid named, I don't know if he's still open, for Mario Joyner. And Colin Quinn was in the green room. And, you know, and there's a couple of shots of them. And then Jerry comes through, because the way the stage is, you open up the door and you're in the green room once you leave the stage. And Jerry looks at both of them and he goes, how fucking famous do you have to be? And I thought it explained comedy, because when he went out, everyone was like, yay, Jerry Seinfeld. And then he started doing his new material and they were like, silent.
Wow.
And it really is the great equalizer, because the audience doesn't care. The audience will care that you're famous for about 5 minutes. But
yeah, right.
And if you can pull out an hour after the audience is just going, okay, he's not doing, okay.
That's right. And it's a lot more detrimental when you're at that level, because then people are expecting you to deliver on that level at all times.
Right.
Versus someone like myself, who's not nearly at the level of Jerry Seinfeld. It's like, I can go out and fucking bomb and people are like, all right, whatever. But Jerry Seinfeld, you got to fucking deliver every time. You got to just deliver. Do you feel like, Carol, like somebody, you know, there was a lot of conversation. There was a lot of talk about wage gap, did you see the documentary Hysterical that's come out, Jessica?
I saw some of it, and then it's very good.
Yeah, it's really good. And they're talking about wage gap. That's really kind of their primary focus is. I mean, Carol, you've been doing this for 4 decades. Why is Carol McCumbry not making the money on the level that Jerry Seinfeld is? Right? Why is even Amy Schumer not making money on that level, or any other female comic that's so established for that matter? Like, they getting paid on that same level?
Well, that has nothing to do with comedy. That has to do with the fact that there's been a wage gap between women and men forever. I mean, they just literally, Congress just filibustered so they didn't have to pass this Fair Wage Act. That just happened. That literally just happened.
Right.
So this isn't a comedy thing. This is, you know, we don't want to pay women more money, period. We don't care what you do. That's very frustrating. I don't know why Amy's not making as much as Jerry. It could be, I will just say this, because at the time, remember, Seinfeld was a huge hit, and most of his money comes from those residuals.
Sure.
So when he sold that particular, I forgot how many episodes and how many seasons, when he sold that, it was for billions.
Right.
Amy's not going to be able to sell This Is Amy Schumer from Comedy Central for that. If she was on a sitcom, it would be a different thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, so you have to look at,
right,
in Jerry's case.
But would they even give a sitcom to Amy Schumer? Would they even give a sitcom to Carol McCumbry? Would they even do that?
They have. I mean, Roseanne, you know, Roseanne had her own show. And,
right. Well,
you know, Brett Butler, Margaret. Margaret only had it for a year or so.
Margaret. All American.
Yeah. I mean, they're, first of all, they're not giving out, they're not giving out sitcoms the way they used to. Remember when I was in LA in the late 80s, early 90s, they were giving out sitcoms like candy. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I don't know if you've been watching television, but it's pretty bad. I mean, network TV is pretty bad. I don't watch network TV. I only watch streaming. I think the only thing, this is so funny, everyone used to give CBS shit because it was the old person's channel. That's the only channel I watch now.
I think CBS is putting out some damn good content. Yeah. That TV show, Evil, I'm obsessed with it. Yeah. What a great show.
Yeah, no. It's a great network. But for years it was always like, well, that's the old person's network. And I'm like,
no, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
So I mean, like, I think the streaming services are giving out are much more like, you know, the thing about Hacks, and I bring it up again, is that everybody, I can't tell you how many people reached out to me or my husband going, is that Carol's story? Because they can't possibly think that an older female comic could be different from another female comic. And I said, I even posted that on Facebook. I said, it's very kind that you think that I was headlining in Vegas, but I wasn't. I was working in titty shows. That's a little bit different than headlining your own show. And I didn't have a mansion. So that's another thing. And right. And my son didn't turn out to be, you know, crazy, you know what I mean? At least right now. So, but it is interesting how people think, well, it's a woman and she's older and she's a comic.
Must be Carol.
It must be Carol. She worked in Vegas. It must be. But I think that HBO Max and Disney Plus, they're the ones putting out great content right now. I mean, me and my husband are so excited because it's the last two episodes of Hacks tonight. And then Disney is premiering a new Marvel show. So we're like, oh my God, we have three shows to watch. And I was so excited.
Which one? Did you watch MODOK yet? MODOK?
No. What is that?
That's another Marvel show. That's another MODOK. MODOK. It's about Patton Oswalt is the lead in it.
Oh, okay. I'll ask my son is a Marvel nut job, so I'll ask him about that. He's a comic book freak.
I've been hearing a lot of really great things about MODOK. I mean, I also opened for Patton Oswalt, one of the good ones. Really.
Oh, he's a sweetie pie. Good
class
guy.
That man is a class act.
Yeah. No, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. And there's a lot of men that are good guys, but there's a lot that are not.
There's a fuck ton more that are not. So
right.
And sadly, they overshadow the good ones. Carol, I know we are. I want to be respectful of your time, but this was fantastic. People can go to findingwomenofacertainage.com, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And also carolmontgomery.com. And I'm all over social media. You know, so come say hi. Come see watch the shows. They're still streaming, you know, they're still, you know, you can go to Showtime. I think they're on Amazon also because they have some deal with Showtime. So you can see both of them. They're really great shows. And the thing I love about the shows is that every woman on the show is different.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because
Vanessa is.
Yeah. Amazing.
She's like a soul sister to me.
She's amazing.
I had just such a great conversation with her. We were like both tearing up, talking about our lives. It was
right. But every single woman on that show knocked it out of the park. And one of the problems women have as comedians is, you know, how I've heard this. I mean, one of the reasons they say that they don't want to put two women on a show is because we all talk about the same thing. And every time, that's another reason why I came up with the show. Because none of the women talked about the same thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, okay, so let me get this straight. You're going to give me grief and not put me on with another woman because we both have a vagina, but yet you're going to put on 18 guys that are going to go, I'm so high and I live in my mother's basement. And you know, when you're jerking off to RedTube, really? Correct. You're going to do the same thing? So when you see the Showtime specials, you watch them and you see that everyone has a different point of view, just like the male comics.
Right, 100%. You know, Carol, it's funny you said that. I was doing a show at the Comedy Chateau that I was telling you about, and it was me and this other black female comic that were the only two women on the lineup. It was 11 comics, 9 male comics, 2 female comics.
Yeah.
9 male comics. Every male comic that went up, from host to anyone who was on the lineup, maybe with the exception of one person, one male comic, they all talked about sex and grotesque, like, talked mm-hmm. about doing anal and just the most, like, raunchiest shit. So they're not talking about the same thing, but God forbid if we mention our vaginas.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's the biggest one. That's the biggest pet peeve I have. And I have to shout out to Stand Up New York. They are notoriously wonderful. They will book a weekend show and it's all just women. It's amazing. And Gotham, I know, books a lot of women, you know, but Stand Up New York is the club that I work the most, but that to me is a sign of, you know, they're like, we know that, you know, we don't have to book all guys. I mean, I know that in LA, it's the misogyny, I think, runs a little deeper right now than it is in New York. But that's always been a big deal. Always been like, seriously, I'm the only fucking woman again? Are you kidding me? Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Well, there's a very big comedy club here, Whole Factory, and they came out. I'm sorry, I was just sneezing. I get allergies sometimes. They came out and said that they couldn't find any female comics, Carol. They couldn't find them. Mm-hmm. I am one of the comics that they have literally, like, auditioned 3 fucking times. They keep bringing me back. They keep, like, booking me. Like, oh, this show, can you come and do this? We can't find female comics, Carol.
Well. One of the things that's really important about finding the stage time, you know, this whole thing that the showcase clubs, mm-hmm. whether it's in LA or in New York, like I have to be passed and I have to do this, and it, you know what, you can work your act anywhere, especially now because of Zoom. So I mean, I have a couple of spots in real clubs. Absolutely, I do, because I called and I said I need spots, and they went, whatever you need. But most of the stuff to work on the new material, I'm doing bar shows. So don't for comics that are listening, don't put that in your head like I have to pass mm-hmm. here.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right, Carol. That saved me, that mentality that you just said, because I figured it out. I was like, I can't have this mentality because it restricts me, right?
Right.
Can't really work. Then I don't give myself the freedom. But you're absolutely right. You can't just have that in your head like, oh, I got to pass this or fucking that's it for my career.
Well, also, like back in the day when I started out, there was Catch a Rising Star, the comic strip, and the improv, okay? Yeah. And they treated, like, the one thing I love, and the comic strip still does this, is they had, the comic strip had and I think New York Comedy Club also does this now too. They had, they have late night. So like after the regular show was over, if there's people, because a lot of people want to stay after the show, they put on the younger comics and they nurture the comics. And they used to do that a lot more back in the day. But the fact that the comic strip and New York Comedy Club still do that is wonderful, because are you doing the check spot, or are you doing, you know, there's 6 people and they're drunk, but at least you're getting up on stage. But mm-hmm. but this whole thing about showcase clubs being the only reason to work in a showcase club is that if your agent says we need Steven Spielberg to come see you, can we get you a spot? And trust me, if Steven Spielberg is going to come see you, he'll call up the improv himself and go, I'm coming to see Mona, and they'll put you on the fucking show. So this whole myth of I have to get on and I have to be a regular at this club, it's a myth. I mean, especially with Zoom and with the invention of the internet, no one has to go to a club anymore. They can, I mean, people who are watching me now can go, I'm going to go see what she's done on YouTube.
That's right.
And they can click on a link. So, you know, I remember one time when I was at I forgot where I was, and I was just doing a spot, and an agent and a big casting director, who ends up being one of my closest friends, and she's in management now, she's my acting manager, they were there. That's what it was like. That was before I had my child. That was 30 years ago. People were actually there to see comedy. When Billy Crystal was, you know, because he was a stand-up back in the day, his manager was, Brillstein. It was that whole group of guys, Brillstein, Gray, and there was a whole bunch of them. Was it his manager? Or was it Jerry's manager? I forgot. They used to sit with the comic and watch them perform. How many managers do you know would do that now?
Not a lot. I mean, only very small management companies do that. They'll do that.
Right.
I mean, you know, I must confess, like, when I go to the Comedy Store, sometimes I'll be randomly standing and, like, talking to somebody in the hallway or whatever. And, like, what do you do? They're like, oh, I'm a manager or I'm an agent, you know? So they're, they're like, scouting new talent or whatever. Sometimes I'm like that. I remember the reason that I became an opening act for Patton Oswalt is because his agent's assistant was in the audience, and she saw me, and she was like, oh my God, I'd love to pitch you to Patton. I think Patton would love to, you know, and then Patton watched my tape, and he was like, yeah, bring her in. I'd love to, you know, for her to be my opening act. I mean, that's kind of how that happened. But honestly, Carol, I made more money and done more shows outside of major comedy clubs than inside the major clubs.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, so there's so many different ways. There's no path. There's no set path. You just keep, you know, if you would have told me that I would sell a show to a major network about women over the age of 50 and it would be a hit and they'd want it back, I'd be like, what the fuck are you on? Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, and that was just because I just decided this is what I wanted to do. And so I've always been like, oh, that door's closed. All right, I'll go through this one. Like, you know, not to do the cliche where, you know, when a door closes, there's a window open. But it's like, I consider myself like a boxer. Like, I'm always doing this. Like, all right, I'm over here. You know, okay.
Bobbing and weaving. Yeah.
I'm bobbing and weaving constantly. Constantly. And I've been doing stand-up for 40 fucking years, and I still have to do that. So if people think, you know, because people are always like, well, you know, there's comics that have made it, and it didn't take long. And I was like, that out of, because there's so many fucking comics.
That's an exception. Those are exceptions.
Right. Those are the exception to the rule. And that's really important. If there's, and there's more than this, but if there's 100,000 comics, two.
That's correct.
Two. Out of 100,000. So do the fucking math, people.
That's correct. That's not the rule. That's the exception.
Yeah, absolutely. The people that make it after it are the people who've been doing it for years.
That's right.
You know? So.
That's right. Slow and steady. Persistence.
Slow and steady. Slow. I know. And I'm very slow now because I'm so old.
Well, Carol, I'm catching up to you, so don't worry about it. You'll have company.
Thank you.
Carol, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. And if I do come to LA, I would like to see you in person.
I would love that. I'm actually planning to be in New York around August or so, so I would love to meet up with you.
Okay. That'll be great. All right.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
That was the amazing Carol Montgomery. I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. God knows I definitely did. If you have not subscribed to my YouTube channel, please do. You can go to youtube.com/ Mona Shake Comedian. Guys, I'm almost monetized. Almost monetized. So close to getting monetized. It's so amazing. Also, we're doing a double Minority Report podcast today. I have another one tonight at 6:15 Pacific. So tune in for that. I have an incredible teenage confidence coach who's going to be tuning in, teaching kids how to gain confidence. You can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter @Mona's Comedy. I will see you tonight at 6:15. Have a lovely day.